Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the show. It's episode 2. Neil, Gwen, how are you?
Absolutely brilliant.
I've physically been better. I'm currently waiting for the results of a COVID PCR test. So maybe today's going to be a bit like a Jeremy Kyle episode. Maybe the text will come through live on air. Has Neil got COVID?
And the disease is...
Well, fingers crossed for you.
It's weird in that if I actually have COVID, it would explain how I'm feeling. The worst thing is probably if they're like, no, it's not COVID, because then I'm just run down. I feel like I'm concussed. It's really weird.
Concussions are nasty. Sympathies. I hope you feel better soon.
Yeah.
You will notice me drinking many, many glasses of water during this podcast.
Okay, good. Yeah, and we really hope it's not COVID or anything serious. Hopefully it's just a bit of burnout and stress because, you know, you just work way too hard.
Definitely. You're a machine, Neil.
Would not
Neil.
Be a surprise.
Okay, cool. So because we have so much to get through, we're going to try and blast through as much as we can. So in today's show, we've got our social engineering, which we've had a lot to discuss today. We've got this week's epic, which is around why it's so hard to get a job as a software engineer. That translates over to any job, really, in the tech team. We've got news bites, if we get around to it this time. And then finally, we wrap up with the wash up. Here we go. It's Tech Team
and
Weekly.
Shall contest,
we
start our stand-up? Sanj.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I completely forgot to say this. Yeah, we've got a giveaway sponsored by an awesome company, Cook My Grub, which I guess we'll tell you about at the end. So stay tuned.
The stand-up. This week has been exciting. So I spoke at Agile on the beach yesterday, and it was my first new talk in like over a year. So I've gotten really out of practice from writing talks. It was a bit of a mission, but I did it, and it was absolutely amazing to speak at Agile on the beach. Like, it's one of my favorite conferences. I wish I could have been down there. There were tweets about people being on the boat and all this awesome stuff and the beach party. But yeah, I will be back there next year. And yeah, absolutely love it. So thanks for having me. Work-wise, it was a pretty quiet week. Loads of people were on holiday. I presented at the company meeting, just talking about how to run retrospectives and all the other standard meetings that we use. So spreading the tools that we use within development is always nice, and we can see if other people start using them. So yeah, that's cool. Personal-wise, my driving test is on Tuesday. So I'm like mega excited about that. Fingers crossed. So next week you will all hear if I passed, and yeah, so fingers crossed. Neil, what have you been up to?
Well, aside from 2 days being unwell, waiting to find out why I'm unwell. On the work front, I mentioned last week, I'm currently working on a webinar that I'm doing for Postman on September the 22nd. The concept for that is now basically finalized. We're just waiting to do a full run through for timings. But I'm pretty happy about how that's going. I know you can never tell how things are going to go on the day and, you know, how active the questions are. It might derail you or take you in weird places, but I'm feeling pretty happy about how that's going to go. Also, last week, I mentioned there's a lot of secret stuff happening that I can't talk about. But one thing I could sort of drop in is, because it's vague, we've got a big thing on the way. And because of that, we're having right now a whole company bug bash, which is basically everyone look at the new version, find out how many problems you can see and get them raised. I've run bug bashes myself for smaller companies where everyone is raising things into me. As I'm not the lead person on the bug bash this time, it's very, very disarming to see literally at peak times an issue coming in like every minute or so, people not really checking whether it's already been raised. So there are other people in the background tying things up, but it's absolutely manic at the moment. Obviously, it's great that we're all finding these issues internally before it comes out. That's the purpose of a bug bash. But it's kind of very organized, very important chaos at work at the moment, which is good fun. On the personal front, it's a big week for me in that before the next episode comes out, I will be turning 40, which is something of a milestone. Yay. Both my parents turned 65 this year, and sadly my dad passed away earlier this year, but it's made me very sort of melancholic and reflective, and very much looking forward to, you know, what legacy I'm going to leave behind, obviously my son as well. And so it's one of those sort of weeks. But also, again, following up from last week, I took the plunge. I purchased a Peloton bike, which is turning up on Tuesday this week. So as long as I have my fitness back by then, looking forward to taking the plunge on that and starting my 40s with a bang. Hopefully not literally. Sanj, over to you.
Thank you. Happy birthday soon to you, Neil. You look amazing for 40.
Thank you.
And congratulations to you, Gwen, on your talk. That was brilliant. I can't wait to actually watch it. Hopefully we can put a link in the episode somewhere.
Yeah, I'll chuck it up when it's online. I don't know how long it usually takes, but I'm assuming like 2 weeks. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, they do go up online, so we'll share it.
Cool. Yeah, my life is nowhere near as exciting as both of yours. Obviously, in this last week, it's post our first episode, so quite a lot's been going on, you know. And I think, like we were all saying, you know, I think we were quite nervous for the first one. This one, we feel much more relaxed about, I think. I also released a special for my other show, Ahead in Tech, which was just a stand-up special to promote Tech Team Weekly. That did pretty well. It was really fun. I'm really looking forward to Bus Simulator coming out, and all three of us are gamers, so we might try and do something with that and the show.
Yeah, I think
that
I
would
think
be amazing.
A game like Bus Simulator is perfect for me right now because I historically have been a massive gamer, but I don't really find the time right now. But something where you literally you drop in, you drive the bus for a few miles, you check people's tickets. It sounds bliss.
So where is Bus Simulator based? Is it a London bus or?
I think this time around there's two cities. There's like a European city and like an American city.
That's amazing. Yeah.
It might sound a little sad to people, but it's kind of fun. It's like harmless fun. No, you know, there's no heart pounding action. No one has to die necessarily.
Necessarily. Yeah. No promises there.
No. also, there's another big new MMO coming out in a few weeks called New World, which you know, I don't know if either of you two are into MMOs, but maybe we can spend some time playing that. And something we're not going to cover, but I just wanted to mention briefly, Twitch has released a new category on their platform for software and game development, because you know there's been more and more devs going on there, and you know there's only the science category, so this will really help out with that.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Awesome. I wasn't aware of that.
I always feel really weird when I'm streaming and I put it under science and you look at some of the things you're competing with, it's not quite the same, but it's great that they acknowledge that a lot of people are using the platform for that.
Yeah.
Social engineering. It's time for social engineering, and it's been amazing. We've gotten some really good feedback from people and engagement. So the first one is Beth DM'd Neil some like incredible feedback. So I'll talk through some of the stuff that she's messaged us. She mentioned the lag. So Neil was a bit laggy last time, which meant we spoke over each other. So we're going to try and figure that out. We've restarted our machines today. Hopefully it's a bit less laggy and we'll see how it goes. Around the length. So yeah, it was a bit long. So we're going to try and cut it a bit shorter. Around my swearing, apologies, we forgot to put on the not safe for work thing. I have a swearing problem. Yeah, totally. So we'll chuck on not safe for work. Or, I mean, yeah, maybe I won't swear this episode, which would be...
We talked about it before we started the series, and the basic thing it came down to is, well, let's let Gwen be Gwen. The reason you're on the podcast is to be your authentic self, and the last thing we want to do is make you self-censor. But yeah, totally understand that. People have got kids running around.
Totally. I've gotten a lot better over the years, but yeah, it still slips out.
Sorry to interject. I mean, I swear like a champion in real life. So, you know, something will slip out.
Yeah, totally, totally. I've managed to like tone it down a lot, but yeah, still slips out. and then, yeah, so highest engagement. So PDH_SciTechNews on Twitter. He retweeted and said he really enjoyed the personal perspectives and real world insights. Thank you so much. Rod Hall on LinkedIn described it as a flawless presentation. Ooh. Thank you. Simon Pryor enjoyed the discussions. You've got really great chemistry, which was lovely. Lee Hawkins, which we're going to hear a bit more from later. He liked the different segments, which helped guide the conversation. And Tamara Bruckner, who is actually my sister, gave us a share on LinkedIn. So cheers, Tams.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's your sister.
And there were, yeah. Yeah. We've cool. both got different last names than we originally started with. So yeah. And we look very, very different as well. But yeah, we had loads of engagement on, well, we had quite a bit of engagement on YouTube as well. So there were YouTube comments. So yeah. Any way you feel like contacting us, whether that's YouTube, Twitter, LinkedIn, or Patreon, give us a shout. And yeah, lovely to hear from you all. So thank you. And Neil, you'll be discussing a bit about building in public, won't you?
Yeah, and just to follow on directly from what you're saying there, Gwen, we've got our Slack workspace set up so that most of the stuff gets funneled straight through to Slack anyway, so it doesn't really matter to us where you post, as long as you post. We love the engagement, and one of the things I've been doing this week is tracking that. We've put a page up on our website at techteamweekly.com. There's a page called PDD for Podcast Driven Development, which is the name we dropped last week, where we'll be publishing a lot of the figures about our listener counts and how many people are viewing it and anything we're taking away from that. So the big numbers, the headline numbers, the fight that's ongoing at the moment is between Twitter followers and LinkedIn followers. Twitter is currently winning 135 to 124. They've both gone up massively this week. LinkedIn is closing the gap. And I think we've said historically, LinkedIn followers tend to be a lot more active. It's very easy on Twitter for someone to just hit follow and then, you know, never see your tweets again. But on LinkedIn, we tend to get a lot more engagement. So actually, I think LinkedIn is probably technically ahead if you look at, you know, how people are interacting. So anyway, fight it out amongst yourselves. We're up to 38 subscribers on YouTube, which, again, given we launched very cold, you know, we put a video out on a Friday saying episode one's coming Monday. The fact that 38 people have found the way to subscribe is great. We've had, this is interesting, if we look at the number of the ways in which people are watching or listening to the episode, this is totally unexpected to me. YouTube, we've had 148 watchers of our first episode as of Friday. Whereas on our RSS feeds, all the different podcast streams, which we publish through Anchor, Anchor claims we've had 20 downloads. I'm suspicious of that figure. I don't quite know how or when it measures it. I'm surprised it's skewed that much towards YouTube. I mean, it's great that it is. That means we'll focus on making sure we're bright and shiny for those who want that sort of thing. But historically, I've always found that, I suppose it depends how you consume it. I tend to prefer to have it in my ears when I'm wandering around doing jobs. It's quite a lot of overhead to say, actually, we're going to sit down and watch an episode on YouTube. So I don't know what you guys think. Are you surprised by that balance?
So I'm all into my YouTube stuff. So I particularly love watching a YouTube like podcast when I'm like putting my face on and stuff in the morning. So that's like my particularly favorite time. And so, yeah, like a bit longer things as well, if I'm like doing my hair, are really useful. So maybe that's what people are doing as well, whether everyone's like doing that, don't know.
The other big section to give a shout out for this week, because we didn't plug it last week at all, I'm amazed by it, is our Patreon. We set up a Patreon just because we thought we should have one. And we had two people who found the way to subscribe to us this week. We've had Dan Billing, friend of the show, a friend of me. He's co-hosted other podcasts with me. He's a fellow tester. And Gilles as well, both of whom have subscribed for £5 a month, which is amazing because we haven't set any tiers up. We haven't made any promises about what we're going to publish, but it's made me think maybe we should. I think I'm going to put up a £5 tier this week called something like, for now, just like friend of the show, for anyone who just wants to chip in and help towards our running costs, which are relatively low. But it's fantastic that people are seeing their way to do this. And then going forward, if the numbers get decent, then obviously we'll put up some Patreon subscriber content for subscribers only, but I suggest we wait until we've got at least 10, maybe 20 patrons on there, because otherwise we're putting a lot of effort in for people who aren't going to see it. So we want you all to come on board. Mm-hmm. It's great if you can, but support us any way you can is amazing. As you see from that page on the website, there are so many different ways you can get involved with the podcast.
Yeah, really, really grateful for all the engagement we're getting in, but in particular our Patreon subscribers. We could always reach out to them to see what they want, if anything.
That's a good idea. Let's ask the audience about what they want.
Awesome. I'm worried about what we get if we ask Dan what he wants. I know Dan very well.
Doctor Who.
Dan will, yeah, it will all be Doctor Who. He's a specialist in security testing as well. So there will be a lot of like hoodies, like hacks and things.
Awesome. But we do have a security thing coming up later. So hopefully that will please Dan.
Yeah. Yeah, so Kev had some feedback for me. I don't know how you two feel about it. He said he doesn't like me on this side. He wants me on the other side, like in the recording. Have you thought about this? Do you care?
Is that because that's where you usually are on your
banner.
Other ones?
Well, no, on our banners and our artwork, like Neil's on the left and I'm on the right.
Interesting.
I guess by the time people see this, we will know what you chose.
Okay. True.
I'll tell you what, just to keep Kev happy, because he's been really helpful to us, I'll just flip over. Hold on. Okay, I just need to swap sides of my windows. All right, and I'll put this one here. Okay, cool. I should have swapped sides now.
Excellent. Sweet.
I will throw in one more thing, because we had a question from Stu C on Twitter. One of the questions he asked us about behind the scenes is how we go about choosing our stories.
Oh, so we collect stories throughout the week from wherever. So we're all Reddit humans, so we have a look at Reddit. We just look at news articles. What's actually really useful as well is the general engineering chat at work. So we get a couple from those. So one of the things that we're talking on later, it came from work, like, and what we're discussing. So, yeah, and then we chuck it all in Slack, and then we meet up on a Thursday night, and there's no arguing, actually. We're all pretty much like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah, I think by the time we get to discussing on Thursday night, we're already pretty sure what we're going to do, because we can tell from how much we're engaging with each other on a topic, or if someone's accidentally posted the same story twice, which I know you did last week, Gwen. But yeah, that's a guide to the fact that maybe we want to talk about the same sort of thing.
And I think we're also going for that kind of water cooler engagement kind of talk, right? We're looking for kind of culturally kind of stuff that people can get their teeth stuck into.
Definitely.
Yeah, and as people start to leave us... Yeah, and as people leave us more and more comments on these stories before we record, that's a really good sign that we're talking about the right sort of things. We're talking about things that are interesting you. We should probably get into it. We should probably talk about the thing that's getting everyone talking this week.
Yeah, definitely. Let's get the ball rolling.
Beautiful segue.
This week's epic.
So in this week's epic, we asked, why is it so hard to get a software engineering job? Now, this was a recent trending article from a person called Kurt, and I hope I'm going to pronounce this right, Korginia. And so he's put this article out this week, but it sort of stems from a two-year-old Quora reply answering a question of the same title. In his original answer, he pointed to like three main things. One, that the highest demand is really for the more experienced people. And there's a lot of people in the pipeline, you know, as the months and years go by, it's so skewed, you know, the longest tail is with the least experience. And then the highest experience is all concentrated at the very top. And everyone's going for those people. He also says HTML and CSS don't make you an engineer. We'll get into job titles, I guess. I'm not sure I 100% agree with that. And then he advises people to hone in on their specializations, use their network, and use side projects to build up their skills. In his recent article, he builds on those points, and he continues to add that the industry has continued to broaden, and it takes time to pick up the breadth and depth of knowledge it really takes that that employers really want you to have, you know. So it's more and more about specialization. There's always new things coming out. He also mentions correctly that, you know, tech tests are really hard. They're getting harder in most places. And companies have really, really long, boring, laborious, tedious interview processes, you know. Now, this brought up a lot of debate, not only with the three of us, but our audience. So with that, I'll open it up to the two of you.
I think if we take a step back and look at what the purpose is of a recruitment process, you have a particular role that you want to fill, and you want someone who matches the requirements that you have for that role. Now, in a perfect world where humans aren't fallible, which unfortunately we all are, what you would do is someone would present a CV, and that CV would be 100% truth of everything that person could do. And you could look at that CV and say, well, that person matches the brief. Unfortunately, the world isn't quite like that. And so recruitment tends to become more of an exercise in trust and testing that trust. For me, I think a lot of the time, a recruitment process, and particularly a bad recruitment process is basically grilling the person to see whether they're telling the truth or not. I think we need to flip that around and be more, the best interviews I've had have been very, very conversational. I think if you get into a bit of industry patter with someone, it's very hard to bluff your way through that, where I've seen people bluff their way through not just, you know, basic like questions and interviews, but also coding exercises. I've got some real horror stories there that I'll get into later, but it's a question of, yeah, finding whether someone is going to be a good fit for the company. And I think that word fit is an interesting one as well. I'm going to just throw that over to Gwen and say, which breadcrumbs of that do you want to pick up? Because there's loads we can talk about here.
So the whole cultural fit thing is a bit of a mess, isn't it? Because, you know, you want diversity within your company. And it was really interesting. So, like, you might get a CV through, and because we're all gamers at work, if someone has written plugins for games and stuff like that, we're like, wow, they'll be a really great cultural fit, you know, all this kind of thing. But that's not what it's all about. Like, we already have loads of gamers. Like, we don't need more gamers. We probably need someone with different viewpoints. And as well, like, what that gets into is like, so, you know, like, do they look the same as me? And it's really, so regarding that, I think it's really important to have a diverse interviewing panel as well. So I think it's really important to, like, you know, show what kind of humans you have. So I really like having, like, women on the panel. So if I go somewhere and there is a woman interviewing me when it's a technical role, I'm like, oh, this is amazing. I mean, I don't mind being the first woman, but it's nice to know that there's other people like me there. And I'm sure the same goes for anyone else who isn't a white male, which is the most common kind of people that you will see. You want to see people that, you know, like, are a bit different on the interview panel. But yeah.
There was an awesome phrase used by one of our commenters. I think it was Callum. And he said, don't go for cultural fit, go for cultural ad. I really love that. That really sums it up for
me. Totally. Yeah. Regarding the tech tests, I find this a really, really interesting topic. So, I didn't actually have an interview for my last role. And it's always nice when you don't have to have an interview. It's like these people know you, they know what you can do, like, just get them in there kind of thing. But I've done a lot of tech tests in the past, and one of my favorite tech tests I did, so it was quite a few years ago, and it was, I'd applied for a DevOps role, but then I was like, I actually just applied because that was open, and I mean, I can do DevOps stuff, but if you've got any tester roles, I'd love that. So they sent me the tester interview, which they expected it to take like 2 or 3 days. And it was my birthday weekend. So we canceled my birthday weekend out. And I sat there and like just coded for the entire weekend. And my partner would have to bring me food because I was forgetting to eat and all that kind of stuff. And I submitted it, and it had continuous integration, like continuous deployment and all this stuff. I'd set up GoCD. And then they were like, oh, sorry, we didn't actually have a role. And I'm like, that's really cute. Gee. And they were like, oh, you know, we might have a role in like a couple of months. And it's like, I don't want a role in a couple of months. And you're kind of, yeah. So, I mean, I enjoyed the test, but it was rude. And it put a really bad, I don't want to work for that company. I have loads of friends that have worked there. And, you know, I appreciate some of the things that the company does, but it was bloody rude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, besides the point that, yeah, that's completely out of line, that's way too much to expect in terms of a tech test, right? 2 or 3 days, that's ridiculous. People will say like a couple of hours and they might mean 8 hours, you know, but even that is really too much.
Yeah, yeah.
I think, again, even when you put a supposed time limit on it, you say, I want you to take 2 hours over this, when it's effectively like a homework assignment, there's no way to verify that someone spent 2 hours on that. I did one a while ago where I very specifically did exactly the time they told me. And frankly, it was an unfinished test automation solution in that time. But what I was able to say was, look, I really did spend 2 hours. You can see very much it's still work in progress. There's still like to-do lines in the code where I'm going to refactor. And also based on this 2 hours, I can extrapolate how long it would take to build a real solution. I definitely got some kudos from them for saying, you know, at least you didn't secretly spend a week on it and, you know, present something perfect. We understand now how you think and how you tick. And that was really beneficial to them.
Mm.
What I really like in those situations is they send you the tech test at a specific time and you send it back after a specific time. So it's like, you have an hour to do this. You can't waste more of your life on this. But then there's also the thing, a tech test, the way to go as well.
So I think, yeah, when you look at like tech test versus, you know, live coding during an interview, I could give you a case towards the latter. This is a nightmare story that happened to me actually when I was at Compare the Market and we were hiring for estates. We put our tech test into GitHub because it makes it easier to circulate. And I can't remember why, but I was Googling for the content of our GitHub repo. I think it was just, I wanted to check whether it was being picked up by Google because it was a new project. And in doing so, I found that someone had posted our tech test on a freelancer website. They wanted to find someone to hire to do their tech test for them. And they said, here's the tech test. Can you do this for me? And now at that point, we had to win the bid for that, because otherwise we wouldn't have been able to trust anybody's submission, because someone out there was sending something that wasn't there. So we had to put the bid to do the work for this person to find out who they were. And that just points to, you know, I said at the start, this is whole, supposed to be an exercise in trust, and the whole thing fell apart at the hinges. And it's like, well, what is the purpose of doing a tech test before, you know, proceeding further or having like a live test?
That's absolutely wild. So I always think the tech test at the start, like the short 1 hour one or whatever, is a good way to say like, okay, I won't waste more of your time. Like, you know, it's a time limit thing, like, but it's because it's time boxed. But yeah, don't know. I hadn't really considered that. That's nuts.
I mean, there are better ways of testing people's, you know, technical ability, right? And also, is it fair? Like, let's say someone's been working successfully in a certain role in your stack for 5, 10, 20 years. Is it fair to expect them to do a tech test? Like, I know a lot of experienced developers who are maybe in the more in-demand sort of space who just flat out refuse or will go back and say, sure, this will take me 8 hours. Here's my day rate. And that's the end of it, you know?
Yeah, I think it's really good.
What do you think? Is it fair? Where?
Yeah, I think it's really good if you tie this in with one of the other things you could do during an actual face-to-face interview, or, you know, a Zoom interview, however you're doing them these days, is to have some kind of pairing exercise in there. So actually you're getting the benefit of seeing how they work, but also how they interact with people. And that then also allows you to have complete clarity over the fact that we don't just code in isolation, you know. We are going to pull up Google. We're going to look on Stack Overflow, and, you know, having that as an acknowledged part of the day-to-day process and going, actually, this is how I work, and seeing the thought process behind the person, sort of raw in the flesh and without any of this, did they really write it? Like some of these other tech test experiences I've had.
I actually really love when I go to an interview and someone has put in the effort to create a tech test for me to do as well, though. So I feel like they actually care about what my skills are, and I really enjoy being able to be like, this is how I work, this is how I do it. But I understand that the way I like doing things is how a lot of people do not like doing things. I like things to be really competitive, and I like to be like, all right, this is how I do it, like blah, 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 and being really showy and dramatic, but most people don't like that. And so, yeah, you're optimizing for like really loud extroverted people kind of thing that want to show off their skills, but like, you know, you're hiring developers, a lot of people aren't like that. So yeah.
We have tech tests, and then we have whiteboards, and then we have system design interviews, and then we have, you know, the rest of the interview process, including like behavioral questions and stuff. Now, interviewing is almost a totally different beast to doing our actual job, right? Like, you have to be an expert at getting the job to get the job, and then you need a totally different set of skills to do the job.
So Matthew had some really good things to say about this. So Matthew Breton said, no one ever seems to think about the experience of the interview. There's lots of assumptions made there that typically makes the interview awful. Many companies or jobs seem to rely on either volunteers or it's mandatory to carry out interviews, and very little training or mentorship is provided. People repeat the experience they had, like assuming because everyone goes to school, anyone can be a teacher with very little training. And I agree, interviewing is a massive skill. And if you're quite successful at being able to interview and hire people that you like, you should be training other people to do that. And yeah, so some senior people haven't interviewed before, and, you know, it's something that you need a skill. And different companies interview so differently. So I like asking a lot of questions. Like, I like asking personalized questions that I've written from their CV, so I can see the enthusiasm when they talk about things that they love. Whereas, like, just asking the same standard questions, like, well, some of the standard questions I really like if I'm interviewing a tester, what is testing, what is quality? They're just really fun to ask. But yeah, like asking. So I see that on your, like, for your PhD, you spoke about like how to send rockets to the moon. Can you tell me about that? And when they're like, oh my God, yeah, it was the best thing ever. It's where you can actually see them, like see their personality and see what they get excited about. And I think that's so important when you're interviewing people, like talk to them about things that they're interested in, not just what you're interested in.
Yeah, I think it's so important that you allow people to be their authentic self and just sort of tease that out in a situation which is normally very formal and very, you know, people go into there with nerves. I think anything you can do to help bring people out of themselves is really good. So at my last company, Money Supermarket, we've been doing a massive push this year to improve not just the interviewing experience, but the experience for interviewees as well. And a lot of that is around stuff we've already talked about, making sure we have a diverse panel, making sure that the people who are interviewing have been trained in how to do that and how to avoid bias. And when it comes back to questioning, although we do try to give some personalized questions like that, one of the things we're really keen to do at the moment is, I'm not there anymore, but I'm sure they're still doing this. One of the things they're doing is having a stock set of questions that, like a base set that everyone has to get asked. Because one of the dangers when you're comparing candidates is it's really hard to do an apples to apples comparison because conversations go off down rabbit holes. You know, maybe you don't get to talk about subject X. Maybe you don't get to talk that much about automation because you'll be focusing about talking about security or whatever. And being able to look at candidates and say, actually, we asked candidate question X and we can compare these two answers, you know, and look at, you know, the level of detail, the level of tool experience they've got and so on and so on. So I think you're absolutely right, Gwen. I think we need to find ways in which people could be themselves, but also we need to try and make it so that the process is fair and unbiased in ways.
Yeah, definitely. So we do a lot of, well, we do pairing in our interviews and we like, so the pairing exercise is always the same. So I think you can get a lot out of that, especially with like what people consider, like are they doing tests first and stuff like that. But yeah, you're totally right. There should be standard questions that you ask. I just find the other ones more exciting.
And often people will just be thrown into the role of interviewer, right? An emergency email or Slack message will go out. We've got someone coming in. The interviewer is not in. We need someone to do this right now. Or they'll just throw it on someone on the team, right? You know, and say, surprise, you're interviewing for, you know, your replacement.
One of the things I was really excited about hearing was from Lee Hawkins. So Lee Hawkins is an Australian, and I'm originally Australian. And he says that an ex-colleague interviewed at a well-known Australian company and there were 8 rounds of interviews. And after they went through 8 rounds, they found out that they weren't, like, this person was not what the company was looking for. Mm. And another ex-colleague had a first round interview with this company as well, and they were expected to invest 30 to 40 hours of prep. For this interview and read a book dedicated to this prep. And what I found really, really exciting is Lee Hawkins says, the tech market is strong in Australia and candidates can be more choosy. So in the past on Slack channels, I've seen that it's really hard to get a job in Australia and like really, really brutal. And so hearing the tech market is strong and candidates can be more choosy makes me really happy because in the past, like when you spoke to people on Slack, it was just like, I'm struggling so much. So yeah, I just thought that was great to hear.
I have a friend in UI and UX in Australia as well. And she says the same thing that, you know, things are coming along quite a lot.
I think companies are going to have their eyes opened when their recruitment processes aren't up to scratch, particularly in an environment where, as you talked about last week, it seems people are beginning to get more choosy about where they work and what they're prepared to put up with. When I first moved to Manchester, one of the reasons I moved up here was the intention is I want to work for the BBC. I've always wanted to work for the BBC. I graduated as a journalist. It would kind of bring my career together quite nicely to work there. And I know someone who works there already. She was able to put me in touch with someone who, while they weren't in the hiring team, they were quite senior. And they were like, yeah, we totally want to get you in. But the BBC has a hiring process, and part of that is because they're government funded and they have to go through certain patterns. But the point is, I was able to do 3 interviews with Money Supermarket and get a job offer from them, and I knew that offer was above the BBC salary band. So on the day that I was offered a job by Money Supermarket, the BBC contacted me to say, are you interested in a first interview? So that shows, you know, the difference is, you know, it wasn't a difficult choice for me to make there.
Yeah.
I had a similar thing with the NHS, and it was just like I've had to take another role. Like, I was so excited to work with you, but also like I need to take a role at the moment. So yeah, it's quite sad when that happens. Yeah,
well, you've got, like, you know, let's not let's put things in perspective. I mean, you've got a lot of very good companies taking up all that middle space that are actually doing quite well in terms of interviewing, right? They're trying to innovate. They're trying to make things easier, and they're making the process better for everyone. They need people, right? And they can't be as choosy. They don't have, you know, like 10,000 applicants like the BBC or Amazon, Facebook, Google, whatever, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And I think companies are showing a willingness to adapt when they need to. When I interview with Postman, their interview process is normally, I think, six separate stages. And bearing in mind, most of their team, the recruitment side in particular is in San Francisco. That was a lot of late in the evening interviews. But they were quite pragmatic about it. They knew I was also looking at something else. So they said, well, we'll merge these two together and we'll do this as one section. And we don't need to do this one because you already demonstrated that in an earlier one. And I think, that's just, again, to bang our drum, it's all an exercise in trust. And it seemed that they were like, well, you've demonstrated you definitely can do this. We understand who you are. So we're just going to move forward because we really want to get you. And so I think you have to look at where you can bend the process when you're able to get the right candidates.
So I was interested in Callum's feedback as well. So Callum on Twitter, Callum said that companies are hiring for unicorns. Job specs in testing read like essays, needing so many languages, skills, and personal skills as well. No one's educating companies on what these roles really need, and companies do not back down. Massive tests and questions that don't seem related to the real job at all. So Callum was once asked in an interview to do a spot the difference kids game and write code in the same interview. Like, yeah.
Like, yeah. What the hell?
Yeah, really interesting. I guess it's because, you know, it's just people making up these tests, isn't it? And it's people are asked by management, like, oh, you're this role, so DevOps human, make up a test. And it's like, oh, well, I mean, what am I meant to do? And yeah, or tester. And it's like, well, what do we need? Okay, we need people who can spot problems. So like, what about a spot the difference game? Like, that seems reasonable. And yeah, it's just quite different, like difficult creating these kind of tests. And yeah, you can make them really enjoyable, but it depends on what people find enjoyable.
I once worked somewhere where we did a puzzle that we took from, I think it was in Die Hard with a Vengeance, where you've got like a 5-liter jug and a 3-liter jug and you have to try and get 4 liters. I think they give that to John McClane in there. But like the number of different approaches we had to that question, like we had people who talk about, can we freeze the water? Can we put like colored dyes? And they're like, no, it's a basic maths / you know, breaking down the problem into smaller pieces. But yeah, you take inspiration where you can.
Yeah, that's amazing. So along with that, so Haroon on Twitter, I used to work with Haroon at Sky. He says, I prefer pairing exercises over offline tech tests. This should be more around a discussion around candidates understanding problem solving skills, etc., not just how well the person completes an exercise. So I think like pairing exercises seem to be the preferred method from a lot of people. And we've heard that from a lot of other people as well. Just keep it small and not the old whiteboard one. Like, can you write a loop on the whiteboard? And it's like, can you give me Google? Like, how often do I do that? You know, like, yeah. That's a good thing about being remote. No more whiteboard exercises, I guess.
I hate whiteboards, especially like the ones where they're so anal. Like, you have to write it perfectly. You know, it's not, they don't want like a rough, like sort of flow of the program that you're thinking about. They want it to be syntactically perfect, you know, otherwise you fail.
I've never done a whiteboard test, like actually on a whiteboard.
I can't remember where I read this. I don't think it was one of our comments. I think I was reading around the subject, but someone was saying that like they weren't allowed to use like IntelliSense or code completion during their interview because that was cheating. But when you'd never work without having those things at your fingertips.
No, exactly.
That's absurd.
David made a really great point, I think, which is it's impossible to know all you need in an interview. That's what the probation period is for, you know. And I think I agree with that, you know. I mean, you get people in and you should really have that probation period, those first three or 6 months to sort of decide if they're a good fit or not. And I think companies should be more ready and willing to let that be the case and to let people go if they're not a good fit. And I don't feel like it happens all the time.
I'm not a fan of probation periods. I think you've hired someone, you like them, like you invest in them, like unless they're like being at work taking drugs, like, or like kicking people in the shins when they see them. Like, you've hired this person, you've put faith in them, use a training opportunity to like help them be the best that they can. So 6 month probations. When I first started at my role, there was a 6 month probation thing, and I was like, we are not having 6 months probation. And so we changed it to 3 because I was just like, I don't want to put anyone through that because it's uncertainty in your life for like 3 months or whatever. And, you know, these people are really excited to have a job and they should feel comfortable.
Yeah.
You don't want 3 months of uncertainty. But I know that, you know, like that's a all chips in kind of idea. It's probably, and I have very black and white thinking, so it might be a bit, silly.
So I know Yago, we used to work together. He's been in the game a long time. He's a great developer, a great guy. In his experience, he says, there's no doubt that they're becoming harder. And I believe this trend will continue as software gets more and more complex. I guess he's kind of got a point, you know, things are becoming very specialized, right?
Yeah, definitely. And you need a lot of knowledge. Like, we're generalizing specialists. How many people are looking for full stack engineers? And, you know, it's spreading yourself too thin. It's good to have a specialty in something and be decent at the rest. But full stack engineer is a really interesting term in itself.
Yeah. If you look back at the interview process we used to have for, you know, what was technically called a programmer, you compare that to if someone is a full stack engineer, you know, how do you validate that they have the ability to do that full stack in an interview process? You simply can't. But yeah, the more we try and squeeze into them, the more complex they're going to get.
Yeah,
definitely.
And it's more about problem solving, right? You know, and teamwork, right? And communication and collaboration, right? You have to hire people that you know are going to grow to meet your needs, right? Or adapt to solve your problems.
Definitely.
We had loads and loads of comments. I'm sorry, we're not going to be able to get through all of them. But thank you so much. Please keep them coming. I promise you, all three of us, we read and discuss everything that you say.
News Bites. So we've just named this segment. I can't remember what it was called before, but now it's News Bites. Bites with a Y, because we're clever like that.
You could guess who came up with that because of the pun in the title. Yeah, so we're not going to get into deep discussion about these things, but this is just other things that are happening in the news this week that might affect you. The one that I want to talk about is from Docker. Big changes announced to their subscription service agreement this week. If your company has more than 250 employees or more than $10 million annual revenue, you're going to want to hear about this if you haven't already heard the panic. Basically, not only do these companies now need to have some kind of paid subscription, either a pro, team, or business subscription, which starts from $5 per user per month, but they've also updated their T&Cs to make it very clear that it's your company's responsibility to track who is using your software and where, you know, how many machines it's installed on, and that you must retain this information for 3 years in case Docker comes a knocking to find out how many people are using it. So if your company isn't already using some kind of remote device management software, some kind of MDM, I wouldn't be surprised if you heard about it soon, because this is stuff that people are going to need to start tracking. I mean, I understand it from a money-making perspective. They're a company. Obviously, the first hit's free, effectively. But, you know, if you're committed to using this as part of your business and your company is large enough, can you blame them, really?
Yeah. We've just had to sort out MDMs at work because we're growing, and people were not happy about some people didn't care, but a lot of people weren't happy about having MDMs on their machines, which is difficult because if you want Docker, you might need an MDM, and like you're probably going to be the kind of people that don't want MDMs on your machine. It's not pretty. I'm talking about the Banksy NFT. So you might have heard about the fake Banksy NFT, which was sold through the artist website. Interestingly, the security vulnerability was actually alerted to Banksy's team via email. So this was like someone hacked the website and sold a fake NFT. So yeah, and they were already aware of the security vulnerability. Well, they had been told about it via email on the 25th of August, which was 6 days before the hack. So it happened fast, this hack. Security flaw allowed creation of files on the website, which enabled people to actually post their own pages. So the buyer of the fake NFT, who was ironically called Pranksy, spent £242,000 on this fake NFT, and they managed to get £237,000 returned to them, which was the price minus the transaction fee, which is really lucky, like, because people don't know who hacked it and stuff like that. Actually getting that amount of money returned is insane. So although Banksy is well known for his stunts, such as the shredding of his famous artwork, Love is in the Bin, straight after purchase, it's believed that this wasn't actually one of his stunts due to the known security flaw and just the timing of things. So with this, make sure that you have your bug bounties up to date. If you don't have a bug bounty written for your company, make sure that you write one. There's ones online that you can have a look at and kind of write around it. Sort it out and take notice when people let you know that there's a security flaw. Pranksy was really lucky. He got most of his money back, but your customers might not be so lucky.
NFTs are one of those things that, if I had a whiteboard of all the things that make me feel old and out of touch, NFTs would be one of them. The very concept of a fake NFT, given that NFT is just an ephemeral, you own a bit of digital content, a fake one of those, is that any different to a real one? And don't know. The whole NFT scene sounds like a massive money laundering scam to me. It's ways to transfer money around with the apparent act of purchasing something that you're not really buying. It's all very weird. People are like selling tweets, like, the original like owners of memes are selling the original pictures from the memes and stuff, but I don't know.
I hadn't considered the money laundering angle. That's a really interesting angle to go on.
Well, there's a lot of going on around the crypto scene, right? And there's a lot of weirdness that, you know, it's hard to understand. You kind of just have to believe in it. It has no actual tangible value backing it. You just kind of have to go along with it. And people speculate.
I mean, that's economics, right? It's just weird digital economics.
Totally.
I'm really into my performance optimization, and two things caught my eye. One was a IDE called LightXL, which is meant to be a replacement or a competitor for VS Code. It's very, very lightweight and very performant. So if the very lightweight and performant VS Code is even getting too heavy for you, there's now LightXL. It looks pretty cool. There's already tutorials there on how to make it look and act like VS Code. I think it's okay, but probably not really of interest to most people unless you're really struggling with the weight of your code base. And the other thing, slightly more interesting and noteworthy, is a new JavaScript library. Hooray! Just what we needed. But this one's called SolidJS. And so the interesting thing about this is it's got an almost identical sort of API and syntax to React. So for many people, it'll be very easy to understand and use. But it's super, super, super fast. So it's only a tiny marginal bit slower than vanilla JavaScript. So if you're in that sort of space, you need that level of performance optimization. This is maybe something you'll be considering or hearing about in the future.
That sounds really exciting. I've not had a look at SolidJS, but yeah, that sounds amazing. Have you used LightXL yet, Sanj?
I haven't used LightXL because I'm still okay with my VS Code.
VS Code's a babe. I'm really happy with VS Code. Yeah.
VS Code is going to the moon. I mean, it's now in the web. It's now on GitHub. It's everywhere. It'll be like Doom. Like, people will be getting VS Code on like little those digital thermometers and scientific calculators, won't they?
That would be amazing.
I'm already hoping that I can hack the Peloton to run VS Code.
So, <Keep us updated. laughs> I've not seen I've not actually gone and seen a Peloton in real life. There's a shop, but it looks too scary to go into. I think, will you be able to give us a Peloton demo?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, maybe I'll record one episode on a Peloton. Yeah. That sounds dangerous. But yeah, the big screen on it is basically, it's literally an Android tablet. It's supposed to be just for Peloton stuff, but there's a hack where if you go to the About screen on your Peloton and you tap the bottom right corner of the About screen 7 times, it drops into Android effectively. There's at the very least, there's a web browser there, so that obviously unlocks the ability to do many things. I think I've got to try and get VS Code on there.
That would be amazing.
and if you can't, you can always get Lite XL on there.
Exactly, yeah.
Well, you know, one thing that we, I think Neil is serious about it, but we kind of half joked about was doing an episode whilst playing Bus Simulator. So I would like that a lot. Can we try and make that happen maybe next week or the week after?
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to see how the tech goes, because in terms of, you know, we're obviously already streaming three cameras. Like you can play in the same game world as each other, but I think there's a bit of working out how that works in terms of split screen, three screen shares or flicking between them. It's an art in itself. I wouldn't commit to doing it for next week, but let's do it soon. Definitely.
Yeah. We could record a little bonus thing for our two Patreon subscribers. You know, they could watch us, you know, play Bus Simulator on Twitch.
Tech team on the buses. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amazing. Well, is it time? Is it the end?
We've got one last thing to do before the wash up, which is announce our giveaway. Competition time. The wonderful folks from a company called Cook My Grub, that's cookmygrub.com, have agreed to give us a £20 Amazon voucher to give away. Neil, can you tell us a little bit about this company?
Yeah, they sound really amazing to me. There are lots of meal services out there. I won't name check all the other ones that are out there. But Cook My Grub is something different in that it pairs you directly with the chefs themselves. So you can sign up to be a chef for Cook My Grub, and you can have your own virtual restaurant. You can cook from your own kitchen. People could place orders and you can deliver it to them. Cook My Grub will help to make sure you've got the health and safety certificates that you need, so everything is hygienic and sorted. And, you know, effectively, you can start your own business cooking from home. You can do the thing you love. As a customer, you can sign up. You can type in your postcode. You can see who's in your area. You can sign up through their app as well. And yeah, you could do it either as a one-off purchase, you don't have to commit to anything, or, you know, they have a machine learning algorithm, they say, that will help to, you know, find the food you want the time you want it. So if you normally have an Indian on a Friday night, then maybe midweek they start pairing you with chefs that can do that for you. It sounds really, really amazing. And even though the meal services that are out there, they do try and, you know, they have that homely personal feel. This is literally pairing you with real chefs.
That's awesome.
My understanding is they have a very limited area right now where they operate in, but then they're going to be expanding to London very soon and then nationwide, they say, by the end of the year, which will be pretty cool. But yeah, please do check out if they're in your area of operation.
Yeah, so go to cookmygrub.com to find out more about them. There's a really awesome blog where they talk about their expansion and how they're growing and, you know, how they help to get chefs on board. If you're interested in winning the £20 Amazon voucher they're giving away, all you need to do is dead simple. Go onto our Twitter account, which is at Tech Team Weekly, and simply find the episode 2 post, the one where we've shared that this episode is now out, and like and or retweet it. If you do both, then you've entered twice effectively. We will then, on Friday, we're going to pick a winner and we'll announce in the next episode who's won that Amazon voucher.
Beautiful.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thanks so much, Cook My Grub.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Cook My Grub.
The Wash Up. All right. Well, thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We'll post what we're going to talk about next week on Friday. So keep an eye out on our socials. So we'll post it on Twitter and LinkedIn. And you can see what we're going to post. And we'd love to hear from you. So, yeah, comment and we'll hopefully mention you in the show. Any feedback on how this episode went, give us a shout. Really appreciated it from Beth. So thanks so much. We'll see you next Monday. So, yeah, please consider subscribing. Wait.